Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our next Thrive Together gathering, the first one of 2016. And I just think it's a fantastic time to stop and reflect a little bit on what's been going on this past year. And I'm also going to invite you, you may have seen the little card on the screen before we started. We're going to be asking for your predictions as well for 2016. Simply what you predict will be the top good news headline or story and the top bad news story for 2016. So you can be thinking about that in the meantime. But anyway, I'm looking forward to a really deep and broad discussion with you today. And I really thank you for taking the time on your weekend to join the rest of us on the Thrive Network for what should be a dynamic conversation. We're finally enjoying some beautiful rain and thunder and lightning and so forth in Northern California. It's a nice cozy day here to just settle in and be able to talk to people from around the world who really want to have a conversation that matters. So we'll have a couple of hours to explore. Kimberly was not going to be able to join us on the call originally today, but her schedule changed. And the first good news item of 2016 is that Kimberly is here and she'll be with us for this entire discussion. So before we get started, I'm going to turn it over to Goa to handle some of the logistics, make some announcements to help clarify any technical issues for you, and then he'll pass it back to me. I'll give you an overview of what we're going to do, and then we'll dive in.
Thanks, Foster. Welcome, everyone, to the Global Good News Thrive Together event. Happy New Year. First, a few administrative details. You are being recorded. We make these recordings available as archives for others. Next, a quick overview of how we use the WebEx system for our events so we don't get bogged down while we're in the flow. So this is just a quick reminder and overview. Please use chat for comments and to share resources with each other. Please use the Q&A panel for questions to us, and please limit each entry to one question. If you're having any tech issues, please email Mitch at events@thrivemovement.com, and please let us know when and if you get that tech issue resolved. If you intend to participate using video today, please submit your question or good news topic into the Q&A, and when we call on you, I will make you a panelist and enable your camera. After you exit the full screen mode, look for your name in the participants panel and then click on the green camera icon next to your name. Okay, you will be unmuted at that time, and please be sure your camera is up and running in advance. Please be succinct. 1 minute for question and 2 minutes for comments. We really want to involve we really want to involve as many people as possible, so please be succinct. Lastly, at one point of today's event, we will be using the raise your hand feature. So let's all find that button now. If you're in full screen mode, find the green bar at the top and activate the participants panel. And now when that participants panel is open, find the hand button. On Mac, it will be on the bottom left-hand side, and for PC people, it'll be on the bottom right, okay? And Foster will make it clear during what part of the event we're going to raise your hand. There will be no questions, no poll questions today, so folks on mobile devices aren't missing out. And lastly, for those of you who may be new to the Thrive Together community, you can access all the archives in the Thrive Together portal. On the right-hand side, there'll be a link which I'll drop into chat now. And that's it. Foster, back to you.
Okay, thanks, Goa. Okay, well, I'd like to start out by just looking back for a little bit and talking about some of the good news that I experienced from 2015. For me, the major headline of 2015 is the emergence and alliance of the BRICS countries. As many of you know, we've been in contact with various representatives from some of those countries, and in particular the Dragon family, and we've been offered predictions. We've been basically guided as to some of the things that are going to be going on for several years now, and it's stunning to see how consistently they have been happening. And examples of these that have occurred over the last year is the creation and launch of the AIIB, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, and the many, many countries from around the world who have joined that bank, including the UK and then Germany and Italy and France and so forth. And in addition, the Shanghai Gold Exchange was launched, as we were told that it would be. So there'd be an alternative that would hopefully be more honest than the gold exchanges, which have been responsible for so much brutal rigging and suppression of the natural gold market for years now. And then the 2010 IMF reforms, Obama finally agreed to them and approved of them. Basically, the U.S. is the only country in the world who hasn't. And they've been delaying it for 5 years to try to hold on to undue influence in the IMF. And because of other reasons that we can go into later on, the U.S. has finally agreed to those. And we were told by the Dragon family that that was one of the key things that needed to happen in order for humanitarian funds eventually to be released. The next thing they told us was necessary, which did in fact happen in 2015, was that they were building an alternative to the SWIFT system, the International Electronic Funds Transfer System, which is really owned and controlled by the Rothschild Rockefeller cartel through the Federal Reserve, and which is used to not only impose sanctions on countries like Russia and Iran and so forth, but also to stall or steal funds that are being transferred around the world for humanitarian purposes. So we were told that they were building alternative systems. Both China and Russia announced in 2015 that they had completed those systems and that they have now been launched and are beginning to be used. So the third thing that we were told that was a really necessary piece of the puzzle, a domino that needed to fall before major humanitarian funds could move, was that the yuan would need to be accepted into the IMF international basket of currencies. And that, in fact, did happen just about a month ago. It will officially go into effect in October of 2016, but we've been told, and I've seen press from both Christine Lagarde and other sources saying that in the interim, the yuan has been given what they're calling elite status, which is basically allows them to have the yuan go ahead and be accepted, because the fact of the matter is that it is already being accepted. The IMF knows that the financial influence in the world is really shifting dramatically from the east, from the west to the east right now. The IMF has asked to move the IMF headquarters from England to from the West, from the U.S. to China. And one of the conditions that China gave them for doing that was that they needed to go ahead and do these 2010 reforms and to accept the yuan into the basket. So I think all these are really positive steps for strengthening the BRICS coalition as an alternative, as a balancing force to NATO and the whole U.S. Shadow government, that what they call the Washington Consensus and the imperialist wars of aggression that they have been propagating. And we're seeing that in the Middle East now. We can get into Syria later on as well if you want to. Another big item for me in 2015 was India coming forward and announcing at the governmental level that they were going to not only allow, but they were going to promote and protect Paramahamsa Tiwari's over unity device. He's got a magnetic motor that runs supposedly between 250 and 280 percent over unity, which is impressive. We touched on that in our film and had an image of him, but this has continued to be suppressed. And now India said that they will protect that from any multinational corporations or other nation states that try to interfere with the spread of that technology. So that is huge. That's a big wedge in opening the door so the toothpaste can start to get out of the tube. And also in 2015, Mehran Kesh and his foundation finally came forward with what they've been announcing for years, which is they were distributing so-called over-unity devices or new energy devices. They're actually plasma devices that I'm not sure are over-unity. A number of people that I know are testing these devices actively right now, but they're definitely a breakthrough in terms of access to energy and hyper-efficient. And the fact that they're now getting spread around the world, particularly to ambassadors of third world countries who wouldn't be able to necessarily afford them early on otherwise, is a really good sign. And the fact that he's from Iran and he's still alive and this is happening is also a good sign. Probably the most exciting thing to me from 2015 is that we're not in a world war. There are lots of wars going on, and the usual suspects are fairly obviously trying to get major conflagrations started for their own purposes. But I think there are enough people awake now. We may be having extraterrestrial assistance as well. There's a lot of talk of that. I haven't seen solid evidence, but I think it's likely that that is helping in keeping us from going into a World War III. Okay, on some more specific, kind of more micro levels, but really important indications. Don't know if you've heard of the M-Pesa. But Argentina launched an alternative electronic currency that people can use from their cell phones. You know, even in very poor countries now, the percentage of cell phone use is just astronomical. And in with the M-Pesa in Argentina, 90% of adults are using it. 19 million people are using it, and they can directly from their cell phone without a banking intermediary. They can use these for purchases. They can buy solar power. They can buy water. They can do all of this directly from their cell phone. Now, obviously, in a true liberty world, we wouldn't have to be a lot of mechanisms to try to get around the subterfuge of the central banks. But in the meantime, this is a very exciting possibility, and it's starting to spread to many other countries in South America and around the world. Also in 2015, a U.S. court ruled that the former Bush administration can, in fact, be sued for war crimes. I know a number of members of that administration, including Bush himself, Cheney and Rumsfeld. There are many countries that they simply don't travel to, not only because of protests, but because of risk of arrest. Also in California, I was really glad to see that our Governor Brown, who has not been great on a lot of things from my opinion, and particularly in relation to guns and mandatory vaccinations, has passed something called the Neighborhood Food Act, which also shouldn't be necessary in a liberty world. But basically, it means that people now won't be banned from growing their own food on their own property. And see why that shouldn't be necessary. But because of raids that were going on raw milk farms and on people growing vegetables instead of, you know, grass or gravel in their front yards, there seems to be some legislation that's supposed to protect them. Then we go on to the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, I've got various good and bad news perspectives on the pipeline. I'm really glad that it's not happening because of all of the theft of land that would have taken place, and the potential, the almost certainty of major oil spills, all of which is again unnecessary in my opinion in a free world and in a world, because in a free world, first of all, these new energy devices would be available and all of this would be obsolete. And also in a free world, any company wanting to build that kind of pipeline would have to purchase the land with the permission of all the current landowners rather than claiming it through eminent domain. And they would be liable for any damages, which, like nuclear power plants, would make them basically uninsurable and therefore financially infeasible. Now, another side of in relation to Obama, I don't think there should be a government in the first place that's deciding whether or not these things should happen. But he did make the decision under the guise of global warming. And it's a very interesting kind of what goes around, comes around, you know, karma situation where the hens are coming home to roost, because Obama is on videotape in many public venues. laughing at the notion that there would be any, you know, foreign corporations suing the U.S. government for interfering with their profits. And now, before the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, has even passed, TransCanada, the big multinational Canadian oil company, is now suing the Obama administration for $15 billion. And of course, the Obama administration is not going to pay. Those individuals aren't going to pay that. They're going to put it on the taxpayer. And if they win and the taxpayer doesn't pay, then included in these agreements, in the NAFTA agreement under which they're claiming this, and then magnified under TPP, that foreign corporation, TransCanada, would be able to seize U.S. assets, public assets, as payment for their winning their lawsuit. Now, of course, where is this lawsuit tried? It's tried in a court that is established by the corporations with their hand-picked judges, independent of any sovereign nation's individual justice system, much less any individual sovereignty. If this suit, in fact, goes through, it will open the doorway to 9,500 other suits, and that's before the TPP is even put in place. So this is a chilling reminder that's actually going to be in the public eye now, and that Obama has to look at, exposing why the government didn't want us to actually read TPP for the 7 years that they have been working on it. Okay, on to other items. Shell has abandoned drilling in Arctic, in Alaska. Once again, I think, you know, we're all using oil while we still need oil, but there is absolutely no reason to defile the Arctic wilderness, and not being able to do that will help inspire people to explore sustainable alternatives, and especially to, like, as the electric car was finally allowed out, to allow these new energy devices out. On the health front, there is an Amish girl who fled the U.S. in order to escape forced chemo treatment. Now, the medical mafia is really amping up their medical tyranny, as seen through this bill in California that was passed, where starting this year, children are going to have to be vaccinated in order to attend public and many private schools. The only ones exempted really are homeschoolers, and you can bet that they're going to be going after them if they can. But so this Amish girl had to flee the country in order not to be injected with chemo and subjected to radiation. And she explored various alternatives and is now cancer free. Okay, now in the weird as can be department, the Hell's Angels are now actively protesting, you know, signs and everything. They're protesting the legalization of marijuana. Why? Because, of course, it's cutting into a lot of the business that keeps them in motorcycles and beer. So, you know, like the drug cartels in Central and South America, the actual opening up of freedom of the free market, of voluntary trade, even in things like plants that you can grow and smoke and juice and so forth, is bad for the underworld. You know, it's bad for the mafia and for Hell's Angels, because they make a lot of money through, you know, risking trafficking in so-called contraband. So just as as we're seeing the drug cartels diminish and criminality going down, and even drug use diminishing in Colorado because of the legalization, just another sign of what would happen in a truly free world. And then I'm sure you've heard that Iceland has now sent 26 bankers to prison for the corruption, which was barely a taste of what actually went on in the U.S., in the U.K., in Cyprus, in Greece, and so forth. But it's a hint to other countries, I think, what's coming. And then I think my final item in the good news is just the light that's being shined on what the public can do about attacks on our health, on our food, and authoritarian corruption through big organizations like Monsanto. So we're seeing the continued exposure and demise of Monsanto in lots of ways. Some of the ways that happened in 2015 is Germany told the EU that it's banning genetically modified crops. El Salvador kicked Monsanto and their seeds out of the country. 65 nations are now labeling and 14 have banned. Unfortunately, the DARC, what they call the DARC Act, the Deny Americans the Right to Know Act, the H.R. 1599 did pass the U.S. House of Representatives, unfortunately, in 2015. Now, if you look into this a little bit, the obvious becomes even more clear. House members who voted to ban the labeling received an average of 3 times as much money from Big Ag as those who voted against it. Now, it hasn't gone through entirely because the Senate is the next chance to stop it. So to whatever degree you can communicate with your senators and so forth about that, now's the time. Or, you know, continue the protests. A lot of people in the Thrive movement, there are tons of GMO groups in our Thrive Solutions Hub, and they are the ones, along with so many others around the world, who are spreading the word that is empowering the demise of Monsanto. Monsanto's stock has dramatically reduced. Now, the last piece on Monsanto is that one of the people in our Thrive Together group just sent me this email yesterday saying that showing that Monsanto was going to be tried at the International Criminal Court in 2016 for charges of ecocide and crimes against humanity and nature. And this is a class action suit organized by millions against Monsanto, the Organic Consumers Association, and many other groups. So that's a taste of the good news. Being involved in Thrive and the Solutions Hub and Thrive Connect, we just are actually inundated with a ton of good news on a daily basis. And we're devoting a lot of our energies, as you are, to fighting to get rid of the obstacles to getting all of these fantastic developments out into the world. I want to mention a couple of the worst pieces of news from 2015 to me. And these first few really touch home very personally for Kimberly and me and for our Thrive team. When we were making Thrive, we consulted with some very sophisticated security experts and got their in-depth advice on how to be safe in bringing the movie out, because we knew a lot of people who had been, you know, threatened or hurt or even killed dealing with even a single issue, of which Thrive dealt with at least 13. So we decided to sacrifice some other potential financial benefits and well-prepared marketing campaigns and publicity campaigns and all of that in order to stay completely under the radar until the film was actually out. We figured that would be the safest for us, for our team, and for the survival of the film itself. Some people thought we were being silly, you know, being paranoid, and, you know, that only happens in the movies, and, you know, you guys should just pray about it and you'll be fine. And, well, we decided to go the safe route. And, you know, we'll never know whether anything would have happened to us or not. But I don't know if you know the name David Crowley. He's one of my heroes. He's a former vet who got very well informed about what's going on with tyranny in the United States. And he started making a documentary. And it was a combination of documentary and dramatic fiction film, where he had interviews with people like Alex Jones and Ed Griffin and so forth, real experts in what's really going on with the totalitarian tiptoe, as David Icke calls it. But then he also raised a lot of money and got a good Hollywood team together to create a fictional segment portraying what it's going to be like, what it could be like in the U.S. if we don't stop this tyranny. And the film didn't get finished. There are several trailers online, and you can get a sense of how powerful this story will be if and when that film comes out. And the reason I say if and when that film comes out is because it has been put on hold because David Crowley and his wife and his five-year-old daughter were found murdered early January, just after New Year's. They had been killed in there. They lived off the grid in a remote location, and all three of them were shot. And so, of course, the team has put this whole thing on hold. The authorities quickly deemed it a murder-suicide, saying that he was suffering from PTSD and just lost it. Well, that is not what his friends said. That's not what recent interviews had indicated. And he had been pledged $30 million to complete this film. So I think things were actually going in his direction, and that this was a brutal suppression. That was one of the nastiest pieces of evidence of what a lot of people don't want to look at, but what we need to look at, what happened in 2015. Along the same line, at least 13 holistic doctors have died of mysterious deaths, most of them in a three-month period of time, starting in July of 2015. And we knew of a number of these doctors. And eventually, some people started putting together the common thread, because some of them were just kind of suspicious. They didn't know what had really happened, but some of them were found, you know, with a bullet. One of the leading holistic doctors, a guy named Jeffrey Bradstreet, was found with a bullet hole in his chest floating in a river. He had been raided by the by U.S. authorities just 3 days prior to this, and there's a specific warrant, a search warrant that you can look at on the internet. In fact, I've written a blog on this whole thing that'll be coming out next weekend, and I've collected a lot of this information for you. And we hope to be doing the next Thrive Together event on this also on February 13th. And we've invited a very knowledgeable guest, but we're waiting until that person responds to us before we actually announce their presence. But anyway, this is a very important thing, because the thread, it turns out, amongst these holistic doctors who were killed is that they were all working on alternatives to traditional cancer treatments, or they were working on the vaccination autism connection. So in other words, they were working on things which with a lot of good news and success, which if they came out would undermine, you know, multi-billion dollar budgets ongoingly of the AMA and the pharmaceuticals, who depend on a continuous tsunami of people getting sick from cancer to keep their profits up. So it's a tragic situation that will hopefully be a lesson and a wake-up call for all of us. And there are several healers in our Thrive Connect initiative as well, who have been threatened, who have been exposed to microwave and ELF radiation that has really damaged their health. And one of them had three attempts on their lives just in the past several years. So this is a very real situation. And it's why we do what we do, even if some people, you know, think that, who don't do their homework, think that we're, you know, silly or paranoid. Okay, so now I just want to go through a number of topics that we could talk about. But I want to let you decide whether you want to talk about any of these or any other topics that you want to bring up. We could talk about money and finance. You know, the bail-ins went into effect a week ago in Europe, just like in Cyprus, basically authorizing the bankers to take your deposits. Instead of them being, they're claiming, in order to save the taxpayer from having to bail out the bankers, which, you know, happened in 2008, and shouldn't have ever happened. They're saying now we need to do these bail-ins so that the taxpayer won't be charged. Well, most taxpayers have their money in the banks. And now they're just going to take it directly from the banks by claiming that your deposits are simply investments in their banks and they can use those any way they want. And they're going to use them to bail themselves out. So we could talk about money and finance nationally or internationally. We could talk about the ups and downs of the Paris Climate Agreement. We could talk about the omnibus bill that was, like the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, it was basically a Trojan horse bill that nobody read that went through, right around Christmas time when nobody was paying any attention. And basically, this is what the politicians used to just cram all their stuff that nobody's going to like into a bill ends up passing under the guise of extending the credit limit for the U.S. so that the country can continue to run. And amongst those things was the CISA Act got passed, which is just a thinly disguised but huge surveillance bill that continues to authorize the NSA. We can talk about the stupendous standoff that's going on in Syria, where you really have to have a day-to-day update on the roster of, who's aiming and shooting at who and who's on whose team and who's stealing what from what. So it's very confused, but I've been spending some research trying to sort out what's going on, and I think I have some sense of what's going on there. If you want to talk about that, or Yemen, we can talk about the whole false flag thing, which is getting truly out of hand. Just as an example, the 7/11 London bombing attacks. Somebody has finally run some numbers. When we were making Thrive, Kimberly used to say that we ought to hire some college students in the statistics department to come in and just run the numbers that all of this suppression could actually be just, coincidental rather than an organized agenda for suppression. Well, we never actually did that, but someone has done it on the false flags and on the likelihood of all of the drills that were going on by coincidence, especially in exactly the locations where the bombs went off in the subways in London on 7/11, the odds they've calculated are 7 billion to 1. And then you start throwing in 9/11 and San Bernardino and Aurora and Sandy Hook and on and on and on. The likelihood that these aren't false flags has got to be in the trillions. We could talk a little bit about what your perception is these days in terms of ET influence, the Corey Good material and Cobra and the things that Stephen Greer and Stephen Bassett are coming out with, the secret space program and so forth. We could talk a little bit about the election if I kind of hold my nose for a little while. We could talk about the militia standoff that's going on up in Oregon and what are the implications of that. So those are some of the things that we could cover. But for now, I want to actually move on and invite your participation in. So I'll still myself for a while. And Goa, if you could put the card up, we'd like you to participate with us in suggesting what you think, what's your prediction for the top good news story. Either that you think you will see, or you can say if you'd like to see it for 2016. And what do you think or what are you concerned might be the top bad news story for 2016? So in order to get your input on this, we're going to handle this a little differently than we usually do. And we're going to use the hand-raising capacity of the WebEx system that we use. So if you have a prediction for good news story and bad news story for 2016 ready to go, then what I'd like you to do is raise your hand technically, and I'll have Goa describe that to you. And then as you're doing that, that will show up for us chronologically, and we'll start calling on you. But there's no way we're going to be able to get to everyone, I think, who wants to participate with this. So we also invite you to put your predictions into, Goa, would that be chat or Q&A that they should be putting that into?
I think we decided chat would be the best place to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's put predictions into chat. Later on, you can put your questions for the general discussion into Q&A. But let's just do predictions now. So raise your hand if you've got them, and also start putting them into chat so we can go through and at least read off some of those while we're waiting for someone to come on or at the end.
So I know we have Bruce has them.
Okay.
All right, let's bring up Bruce.
So Bruce, if you could activate your camera, let's bring you on so you can share your prediction.
Okay, gotta put the microphone on. Yeah, hi.
Hi there. Your camera's not working yet.
Yeah, I know. All right. Okay, so
welcome.
Thanks a lot, and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
My prediction, I'll start with the bad prediction, and I think we're already seeing that occurring. I mean, your information about David Crowley, you know, is in this department. I think that the powers that be are going to be in a position of trying to suppress specific information that is inconvenient to them. I think this year is going to be incredibly volatile, and I think that the system itself is going to have to try to protect itself as much as possible. And accordingly, if people are bringing out specific information that's threatening them in a timely way or a bad timely way, they will be trying to do their best to suppress them. I know that Alfred Weber came out with a story just a couple of days ago about a man who has been, he was put on a 3-day hold, which was then turned into a 14-day hold. And now they have him essentially on an unlimited hold in a mental health facility. That's one thing that we might see.
And of course, that's authorized now through the NDAA. All you have to do is declare somebody a suspect as a terrorist. And now it's so-called legal for them to do that.
Right. Well, under the NDAA, they could just disappear somebody without even telling anyone that they picked them up or where they went. And they can be held incommunicado indefinitely.
Right, without even an attorney, yes.
Yeah. So, and I also believe they will start attacking websites. I think that the CISA, I don't know everything that's in the CISA bill, but I'm sure that they will be disabling at least the major domain name system so that domain names will be inactive. It might be a good idea to save the IP addresses of your favorite websites. In case that occurs, they may be available via IP address, but not by their domain names. So that's my bad news prediction.
Okay, moving right along.
And my good news prediction, and this is something that I'm seeing all over. I don't know if you're aware of this supposed judge. He's an interesting character up in Alaska. Anna von Reitz, or Anna Reitzinger, who has this book right now, which is quite current, called You Know Something is Wrong When... .. And I have been sent links to that book now by about 8 people in the last week and a half in my local group. And also, we started planning to do some kind of a book study group on a particular book that we're looking at right now, which I'm going to hold up for the camera. This is written by a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, Professor Michael Humer, PhD, and it's called The Problem of Political Authority, and it is a philosophical treatise in incredible detail and depth about every aspect of the question of what makes government authority legitimate. Oh, Cynthia says, read the subtitle. It's an examination of the right to coerce and the duty to obey.
Yay.
And it's extremely well written. In every single chapter, he comes to a conclusion at the end of the chapter. It's very well written. He's not stuffing anything down your throat. And he's very meticulous in looking at every aspect of that problem. I also want to mention one other book that I would recommend to everyone if they haven't had a chance to read it yet, and that is Larkin Rose's The Most Dangerous Superstition. And we have given that book to several friends who have read it, and they admit that it's incredibly important information and something that we should all be aware of. And at the same time, it's been very, very hard for them to handle it in some instances, and they've had to put it down at least temporarily. Or alternatively, other people have found it to be an incredible page turner that they could not put down. But in every case, people are left a little shell-shocked after they read it. So I think that information is percolating on a very wide front. And I think it may emerge this year that people are talking about this all across the country. And I think we've already seen foreshadowed that the government is now considering people who are getting into this information as anti-government extremists. That's the term they're using. And they're also equating this extremism directly with terrorism. And so that may be one of the ways that they're railroading people into some kind of NDAA type disappearance, so they're no longer a threat, particularly at certain times. So
I appreciate you bringing this stuff up. I think one of the things that's important here is with the bad news to see that there are things to be doing within that. I mean, a book group, for example, when getting into something is a great way to go with understanding. And if you have something that you see coming down the pike, potentially like, you know, greater internet suppression, and the idea of saving your favorite IP addresses or something like that. Any solution or response tactics or strategies that you have to offer as you're calling in now to offer your good and bad news, I think it's really helpful because, you know, the reality is people are waking up. That's the good news everybody sees, is that there are more and more people waking up to, you know, I was talking to my son, he calls it the second question, you know, where instead of just this fast first, you know, first impression stuff, it's like, wait, what? What's the next question that we need to be asking here to be thinking about this? And it certainly one of those has to do with the right to coerce and the duty to obey. I think that is the question of the times. And I think it's what is at the basis of what is rising up for people, whether it's regard to our health care or our surveillance or the imposition on our internet freedom. There are any number of ways that it plays out. And I think we each have our own, you know, our own purpose and passion in relation to how to do that. But the fact of joining together and being in these groups, whether it's a book group or a buddy system to explore some new information or even a different choice that we want to make in our lives, I think it's a great way to go to stay empowered as we, learn about and see that it's big times we're in. I don't think it's possible to be awake and not have to revisit our relationship to courage. It's just, this is where we are in the process of history and evolution. And so it's our time to do that. So Bruce, we're always grateful for you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Bruce, if you would, please post both links to those two books in chat if you can.
Okay.
during this conversation. And I just want to echo that I totally agree with you that this is actually what's trending. More than anything else I know, you're not going to be reading this in the mainstream news, of course, for obvious reasons. But, you know, my favorite philosopher, Stefan Molyneux, has just crossed 4 million downloads of his podcast a month. It's the biggest philosophical conversation in history, and it's growing really rapidly because as smart people who are open-minded consider it, frankly, I've never seen anyone go back from the conversation, as uncomfortable as it is. It's just so real and so true that you end up finding people who can have the conversation rather than shutting yourself up, ultimately. Okay, thank you, Bruce.
Thanks a lot.
I think we'll have a few more people calling in to say their good news or bad news, and then review this list of possible things to discuss that Foster mentioned. So, Goa, you have someone in line?
Yes, we've got Winnie up next. I've just unmuted her. Doesn't look like they've got video, but we have her on audio.
Okay.
So I guess, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Just to me, without going into all the details, the worst thing that could happen is Trump could somehow get elected president.
Okay.
Is that okay? So that's one of your predictions for bad news in 2016.
That's right. That's
okay. Right. And what's your good news one?
I don't know. Somehow that we get enough mobilization of grassroots that we continue to turn all of this bad news around.
Yeah. Great.
And is there a presidential candidate that you think would be most helpful in that regard?
I haven't quite decided. It's kind of between Bernie and Hillary at this point.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Winnie.
Sure.
Thanks, Winnie. Also, after you've participated, go ahead and click on that raise hand button again, and that'll lower your hand, and that way we can drop you out of the list and be more effective. Thank you. All right. Next up is Sperry Andrews.
While Sperry's coming on the political topic, if any of you haven't looked at my blog from a few weeks ago on defining politics, I really go into great depth on the whole political issues and what are the definitions of words like socialism and republic and democracy and so forth. And I do kind of a summary of the candidates, the possibilities and risks of each one of them. So check out that blog on our website called Defining Politics. The subtitle is Knowing What We're Talking About Could Save Our Lives.
Okay, I think we have Sperry with us, and if you can activate your camera, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm having a problem with the software, but can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Loud and clear.
Great. Well, as some of you may know, I've been working for over 30 years on exploring how it's possible that we in groups or as a species can simply by being aware of the fact that awareness is where all of our perceptions originate and are united, like a mirror unites our image when we stand in front of it. This awareness, when we're more aware of it, which yogis have recommended for thousands of years of recorded history, when we're aware of it collectively, as in the groups I've been doing internationally now for these three decades, and exploring it objectively with neuroscientists and multiple brain research laboratories, that we can actually demonstrate that we're indivisible, even though we appear to be thousands of miles apart, appears that we're not actually separated by space or time or personality. Or by our apparent individuality, we're actually indivisible. And by scientifically, as well as bringing this into film and into theaters where people on screen sharing this indivisible way of being awake and aware as one and many, with the audiences breaking the fourth wall, so-called, of the film, and in joining with the audiences to sense together this awareness that unites us indivisibly, we can popularize very rapidly. Jim Carrey is interested in this, and many of the leaders in the spiritual movement, people like John DeRuyter, Eckhart Tolle, etc. And men and women are who've been helping people learn to be awake in this way are joining in enthusiastically in the project. And so there are many.
Barry, if you could write the headline for the New York Times that was going to announce this good news story for 2016, what would it say?
I'd say that we're all wondering and about how we can be what we are, something like that.
Yeah. And well, wondering could be spelled O-N-E.
That's nice.
Yes, wondering, exactly, O-N-E-D-E-R-I-N-G. Being what we are.
Yeah. Well, Kimberly and I are going to be going into a lot of this next weekend. We're going to be each presenting at the Architects of the New Paradigm Conference in San Rafael next weekend. And it's a really interactive conference that is being designed to really look at what is a paradigm, what is the problem with the old paradigms, and what's missing from a new paradigm that could actually move us into a thriving world. And so we've been interviewing people for several months about what the new paradigm is. And the most common theme is what you're talking about, Sperry, of more and more people are waking up to this oneness, to this indivisible aspect, to our participation in the universe. Then the next question is, so what when it comes to, you know, to fighting tyranny and liberating all of these creative solutions? How does that actually, what does it look like when the rubber meets the road of a spiritual understanding of oneness? How does it meet the road with the protection of the sacredness of each individual being? So I won't go into it now, but for those who are interested, we'll be going into that next weekend, and we'll put a flyer up near the end of the call for those of you who are interested in that. Sperry, do you have a bad news story that you anticipate for 2016?
Yeah, that could be succinct. A succinct bad news.
Thank you, Kimberly. Yeah, I think that it's perennial, that the extent to which we perceive, you know, ourselves to be isolated and separate, we're naturally enough feel insecure and unsafe. And some of us, perhaps a minority, react to that by becoming very aggressive, greedy, and dominating and tyrannical. And we need to, by being indivisibly awake as one and many, that can spread to those who are so insecure and warmongering and horrifically horrific in their behavior, and it, like this dawn coming up, that the warmth of our collective consciousness can influence the tyrants.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, I know we have one more coming on for that. Remember to click the hand raise once you've finished, because we might need to use the hand raising for something else coming up to figure out what topics that Foster mentioned we actually want to be focusing on. All right.
So we have Melanie up. She's calling in.
All right.
Are Melanie, we unmuted?
Yes.
Ah, you can hear us.
It's not Melanie.
This is actually Melanie with a very deep voice.
Sounds like David. Hey, David.
This is her husband, David. My prediction, not a wish, but my prediction for 2016 is that we'll finally see the fiat economy of America replaced with an asset-based economy, and that we will see the demise of the Federal Reserve, and that we will see an entirely new currency situation globally, not just in the United States, but globally. That would be my prediction, because I believe we'll see that in the first quarter of this year.
Great.
Thank you.
I wholeheartedly agree with that as a prediction, not just a wish. That was going to be number one on my list as well. Thanks for that, David.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
So Foster, I noticed you mentioned a range of things to see, you know, what it is that people want to be talking about. And I'm wondering how to get that input, if you want to read that list and have a show of hands or something, or just...
No, I think that what I'd like to do is just do a couple more predictions, or if we have some also in chat, so we could read a few more. And then I just want to open it up to people to say, well, I guess they could either put it in, put a question in Q&A that they would like to discuss.
Right. I think that's right. Cause you mentioned a big range and, you know, are people interested in Syria or the national economy, the international economy, what's happening in any number. If you want to, you know, go through that list again quickly of things that you thought of and just spark that, or if people have questions.
Yeah, let's just first get a couple more predictions.
All right. Do we
Well, there's Bill Wise and Joyce just popped up with a question, and I've got a couple of predictions if you want to fill
it. Okay, great.
So let's bring up Bill. I'll change them to panelists. Bill, are you there? Bill, you've been unmuted. Can you hear us?
All right.
Oh, it doesn't look like it's working. Okay. Well,
Bill, if your microphone's not working, maybe you can put your prediction into chat if you haven't already.
Yeah, and put the questions, folks, into Q&A. That will get to me to bring on up here so that we know what subjects you want to be talking about.
Cool. Well, while you're waiting, do you mind if I chime in with a couple of my
Please
predictions?
Please jump in, yeah.
Cool. Well, as most of you guys know, I like to track things that are happening in sort of some of the tech realms like cryptography and alternative currencies like Bitcoin and 3D printing especially. So I think sort of on the minor note, I think there's going to be a lot of more forward progress like we've seen in 2015 and 2016 with 3D printing and metals and multi-materials. And I'm predicting in that realm that there's going to be some more convergence of the 3D printing with materials, but also robotics like pick and place. So you're going to have the evolution of the 3D printer into more of like it's actually building working machines as you pull them right off the pallet. So I think that's going to be one thing that's happening. I think we're also going to see a lot more action in the new energy, like you talked about with Tiwari and Kesh. QEG replications, I think, are also going to take a lot of media time this year. And this is also what people are popping into chat, too. So I think energy's a big piece here. I also like to highlight, you know, the solar energy, I think, is going to have some big news. Tesla solar wall, or the Tesla wall, rather. And I think we may even have some breakthroughs in the battery technology, which should, you know, which leverages a lot of these other pieces, which I think is going to be big. But I think the biggest thing that I anticipate for 2016 is I'm anticipating a massive sort of data dump. You know, when Snowden did his big release, I think that was kind of the prelude or the teaser. And I think there's a lot more to come. And I think in that realm, maybe there's going to be a lot more stuff about the secret space program that Foster alluded to that may be coming up. As far as bad news, I think the economic piece is going to hit some people in a bad way, a lot of other people in a good way if you're prepared for it. I love this Thrive Together community because they're so open-minded and people have been listening, and I think we're all going to be prepared. So I think that's a good thing. The big news in the bad thing, in the bad way, I think is more of bad news for Monsanto. I think these suits and the exposure that's going to be happening, I am anticipating the corporation of Monsanto being exposed and going down in a big cloud of Roundup. So those are my predictions for 2016.
Great. That's really good. Thank you. Hey, you know,
I would add to that also, before we leave the topic of the energy, I got a communication from a colleague of ours, James Martinez, yesterday, who is very involved in gold-backed banks and in new energy technologies. And he said that the presidential candidate Andrew Basiago, who has just announced his candidacy recently, is fully in support of cold fusion. And the Lakota Nation has come out publicly announcing their support of cold fusion and their intent to use it on their reservations. So it's just starting to squirt out all over the place. Okay, sorry, Kimberly, you were saying?
Yeah, well, we're having lots of good, you know, I love this network. One thing Elizabeth Humphreys asked is if you would do a brief kind of download on the subjects that you mentioned. Just to kind of say, what is it? Like just off the top, and then we can go deeper into those, because I know there's another, we can bring up someone who wants to go into, let's see. Again, Melanie has a question to bring up about, and that's just a voice. And then Debbie Peters, let's get to Debbie Peters here.
All right.
But Foster, I think it's a good idea if you can do it, any of those that you can just kind of say some stuff you've been thinking, because it's really, you always have a, you know, you research this stuff so much that you have a more comprehensive understanding than most people.
Well, I don't want to just start being a talking head again for a long period of time, but I appreciate the suggestion, and I'm always delighted to share, you know, what I've been learning. So I think what I'll do is I'll intersperse them, intersperse little items while we're waiting for people to come up or in response to specific questions. So why don't you get ready to bring the first person up? And one thing that I'd like to mention as a recent occurrence, and also one of my predictions for 2016 on the good news side, is that Switzerland has decided to vote. They're actually going to be holding a referendum on the elimination of fractional reserve banking. You know, this is huge. Going to an asset-backed international financial system is huge enough in itself, and actually going to at least more substantial backings. But the notion that an entire nation is going to vote on whether or not to actually go further still and eliminate the banker's ability to arbitrarily create money, and particularly to create money as debt, is absolutely historic. I found a quote from a guy named Josiah Stamp. Some of you Liberty folks may have read about him. But anyway, he was in the early 1900s. He was a director of the Bank of England, and he was an industrialist and economist. So he knew what he was speaking about. He said, if you want to continue to be slaves of the banks and pay the cost of your own slavery, then let bankers continue to create money and control credit. Okay, the one little bad news footnote on that is that Switzerland has, when they do these referendums, as they did for unpegging from the, no, it was for repatriating their gold back in 2015, they held the vote, which looked from all polls like it was going to be an absolute landslide. They held the vote on Diebold electronic voting machines, which have been created and controlled by the very cabal that we're all talking about for many years. And again, at the last minute, that vote swerved in against the repatriating the gold. And I have strong concerns that they will try to do that with this one again. So I'm trying to get the word out about that. And one of my predictions is that Switzerland will actually eliminate fractional reserve in 2016. Okay, who's up?
I think we have Debbie and then Joyce. Is that right, Goa?
Oops, I'm sorry. I was muted there. Debbie is ready and unmuted.
All right.
Are you there, Debbie? Oh, bummer. Well, let's bring up Joyce instead, since we can't reach Debbie.
Why don't I read Debbie's question?
Okay, perfect.
Debbie, what financial predictions do you see for 2016 for the world, Foster and Kimberly? You can go first, Foster. I'll add to it.
What predictions for 2016?
Financially.
Oh, financially. Well, a bunch of them have already been covered. What David said, I was going to say if he didn't, I'm predicting an asset-backed financial system. I'm predicting the release, the beginning at least of the release of Dragon Family funds. I think we'll see some sort of global currency reset. Unfortunately, I think it'll have to do with the IMF and the special drawing rights, this new global electronic currency that we've been warning about. But the positive aspect of it will be, I think, that currencies will be reset based on real, you know, products and services. And so countries like Vietnam and Iraq will begin to recover and, you know, the value of their currency. Unfortunately, I think that the U.S. will be hit in devastating ways on the value of their our currency because it has been so completely inflated artificially. The Senate is getting set to vote very soon on the audit the Fed bill, and I predict that it will get a lot of publicity. I'm not ready to go as far as to predict, but I certainly strongly hope that it passes, because that would start to undermine the House of Cards in another wonderful way. I think those are my major financial predictions.
I'll add some financial predictions to the to the mix. I mean, they're pretty much along the same lines, but I think this thing about going asset-backed is really significant, because I do not see, you know, China's new role in the world. I mean, it looks new, of course. It's been, you know, being executed very carefully over a long haul here. And I'm not, you know, I'm not hopeful that that means we're going to have this, you know, that this changing of the guards is going to bring a big benevolent turn of events. I don't feel that. But I do feel that the asset backing of the BRICS countries, to me, that's the real benefit of the whole deal, is that it finally brings up the issue of the fact that the dollar does not have any real intrinsic value other than, I mean, very little, other than that it was forced to be used, right, in these international trades and such. And so I think that that's the whole deal with the 2010 reforms and why that's so significant, is that it brings to light the issue. You know, if you're given a chance to work with money that has some backing behind it, so that there's actually a commodity or that's backing it up, it's just a much more solid way to go, and you don't have to have faith in bankers, you know, to somehow do this ridiculous, you know, house of cards on the backs of taxpayers and people with their money in the bank. So my prediction is that it's really already happening, but that this the conversation about asset backing as brought to the fore through the BRICS countries and the rise of China in people's minds and attention, and all these multi-billion dollar deals going on between Russia and China now instead of using the dollar, even though it's bad for the dollar, you know, in a certain way you think about it, I think it's something that has to happen, or it's just going to keep on getting worse and worse and crazier and crazier. So I think it's not a smooth transition, but I think one of the other aspects of globalization and the intermingling of all the countries is that it's not really to anybody's advantage for America to go down completely. I don't think China wants to see America completely crumble. So even though the bringing in this asset backing of currencies and the resetting of some, which I also think is going to be happening, will be, you know, shaky and rough in some ways, because if you can imagine, if the dollar is revalued down and every, you know, how many people are on the brink of, you know, one paycheck away from homelessness anyway, and things like that, the evaluation change can be really significant. And I do believe that the waking up and other things that people are doing in groups to get together, like, for example, that you can grow food now in your yard, that's significant. And people questioning the power of the government to make the right of the government to make these decisions that keep these things going. I think that's happening at the same time. So as things get hard, they also give people less to hang on to and more incentive to wake up and take the actions that, you know, a lot of people are helping to create the alternatives already for them to land in. So my financial predictions are similar to Foster's. I think that there's that this asset backing is really going to have a huge impact and trickle down effect. And I think it's already underway with the BRICS being acknowledged and the yuan being included in the basket. And I know when we mentioned that in some blog, the yuan getting included, it was like, oh, do you think this is good or something, you know, that China's going to be taking over? That's not the point. It's happening. And so now how do we deal with that? And what are the things that can be good out of it? So I would say that, add that little bit.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I think we have chosen Joyce to be up next, so I'll unmute that person, and their video is ready to enable when they are. Joyce, are you there?
Hey, how are you? It's Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Thank you.
I have a quick question, but a comprehensive question. Can you summarize the top 2 to 3 presidential candidates cross-platform who you believe would be forward-moving for our economy internationally, free energy, and systems overhaul?
Okay.
Good question.
All right. By the way, Joyce, while you're on, I want to give you a little plug because Joyce has done just fabulous work over the past probably at least 2 years, putting together an amazing book that we were allowed to participate in called Extraordinary Leadership During Extraordinary Times. That's appropriate given your question, Joyce. But I happened to be looking at a video of you talking about the book this morning, and you started off with a quote from the Dalai Lama, which really was close to my heart, where he was talking about that humanity needed to learn to distinguish between what he called extreme political concepts versus universal spiritual values. And that's to a great extent what all these conversations, you know, about current events and past and future and all that stuff, for me, they all keep coming back to that very distinction. Now, for me, politics in itself is an extreme concept and a very dangerous one.
Yes, I agree.
But I like that he was making the distinction between a political concept and a universal value, because that's, to me, what the non-aggression principle is. It's universal because it applies to everyone, even extraterrestrials. And it's also based on values rather than on who's got enough money or guile to get control of the military and the money and start telling everybody else what they can and can't do. So thank you for that book. And if you want to put a link to that book in chat, that would be great.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
But I digress. Let's see. I'm more excited about your book than I am about the political candidates. But just to take a few of them, again, I did this pretty in-depth in that blog. But for those who haven't seen it, I'd probably start with Bernie. Because there's a lot that I like about Bernie. I think he's an honest man. I think he's a really well-intended person who would genuinely risk his life to go after Wall Street corruption. So, and he voted against the Iraq War, which is very rare back in those times. So that's the upside of Bernie for me. The downside of Bernie is that he's voted for, you know, one, you know, sending money and troops to one war after another since that time. He's in favor of mandatory vaccinations. And fundamentally, he's a self-acknowledged socialist. And in that article, the major reason why I wrote that article was because I am very, very concerned about the socialization of the United States and the world right now. And so I started off with a definition of what socialism is, because most people don't have any idea. I asked them, many people, and the most common answer was, oh, that's when the government finally takes care of the people. Well, that is a nice idea, and that's what, you know, Mao said, and that's what Lenin and Stalin said, and that's what Bernie's saying. But it's never, ever what's actually happened. It's a great ruse to further centralize control and socialism. I mean, Mao came right out and said, I've got quotes in an article where Mao says socialization is the preparation of a nation, of the masses, for communism. And socialization is where you haven't seized all private property, but basically all of the goods and services, all of the machinery of civilization is put into the hands of, well, they call it the people, but it's not the people. You know, you and I don't have control over that. It's a small cadre. It's the Politburo. You know, it's a few people who get the maximized centralized control. And the first thing they're going to do is put in more laws to hold on to their control, and pretty soon they're going to have to be putting down uprisings. So that's when the murders and disappearances start. And you know, it was in the tens of millions in you know, 70 million in China, 30 million in Russia, and so forth, of people who got murdered by their own socialist or communist leaders, many times democratically elected. Hitler was democratically elected, and he ran the National Socialist Party. So when someone calls themselves a socialist and then is willing to back it up by saying, I'm going to raise the tax rates up to 90%, well, I stand warned, and I start warning other people, this guy's trying to, you know, get his hands in your wallet and his hands around your throat. So I'm very concerned about Bernie, as I have been about Obama, for those reasons. And now, to kind of bridge the upside and downside of Bernie, you know, Kimberly and I have described in Thrive and many times on our website this three-stage strategy toward a liberty world. In stage one, which is basically, you know, restoring as much integrity to our current systems as possible and taking care of people in transition, I think Bernie's not a bad, if there has to be someone amongst the culprits who are running, he's not a bad one for stage one, but only in the context of, okay, you get a few years and you don't get to raise the tax rate. What you need to do instead is cut the military budget in half and eliminate the Federal Reserve. You'll have trillions. You'll be able to reform not only the U.S., you can do the entire world with the money that's freed up just from those two things. Okay,
can I,
so that's
can I ask something about Bernie here while we're on him before moving on.
Sure.
I think it's really important. I mean, there is going to be a president, and this notion, you know, we have at this stage of the game, there are so many people whose survival is dependent upon the government. So our compassion is often measured by how much we'll support the government to take care of people. And so you're just kind of going down the wrong road to begin with, but it's the road that we're on, and there are real people's lives in the balance meanwhile. And so that's where the whole stages things comes in, and it's where something as, you know, potentially just dangerous as having a president in power to make all these decisions about our lives that aren't empowering or just, you know, that's a problem in itself. But I think that it's where we're called to put the pressure on. You know, mandatory vaccines, mandatory anything is unacceptable, because sooner or later, the thing you don't want will be mandated. It's guaranteed. It happens to have already happened with vaccines for a lot of us, you know, but even if you think vaccines are good, if you want to voluntarily participate, great. So for Bernie to support those things, I think he needs to hear if there's anyone who's going to vote for him, they need to call him out on his war record. They need to call him out on this mandatory vaccines, and they need to have the conversation about him backing off from auditing the Fed when he was in the committee to do that with Ron Paul. So his actions have been, you know, whether he's a good person and really wants to help take care of people and go up against Wall Street, I don't know. Hope so. But I think that it's up to the people who are going to vote for him to put the pressure on if something like that's going to happen. Because if you accept him as, okay, finally he'll take better care of people, yeah, that I think that's, I hope that's true. But it's got to be that we find ways to empower the people in the process, because just being more dependent upon government, anything they can give you, they can take away. And I think that's an important thing to remember. So my only hope with Sanders is that the people who vote for him would also put the pressure on to hold him accountable for the things that I think are essential.
So stage two in our transition strategy is more like a traditional conservative or capital L libertarian. It's minarchist, where you shrink government down to the just the protection of individual rights and whatever is deemed to be the commons, and you get out of wars of aggression, and you have the sound currency and so forth. And to me, Rand Paul is the only one who's close to that, you know, other than a true libertarian candidate. I think Rand is the most aware of the major candidates in terms of liberty issues. I think that Marco Rubio is, in my opinion, probably the smartest of all the candidates, but also one of the most dangerous. I can just feel him just itching to go to war. And the same for Trump. I think one of the things that about Trump that's unusual as a political candidate is he's actually a very successful person in his life, you know, in traditional terms. He's a very successful entrepreneur. He's a very successful author. He's a very successful media mogul, you know, creating his own shows in a successful way and so forth. And so I think he's an intelligent person, but that doesn't mean that you're a wise person at all or that you're a stable person. And my biggest concern, frankly, about, I mean, what I love about him most is that he exposes the charade of so-called independent media. Just brutally, like no politician certainly in my lifetime, but I don't even know about in history. And I really enjoy that process. And he's the one of the few politicians in history not beholden to their contributors, because he's got so much money himself. So that gives him a certain amount of freedom. But his sheer ego and level of instability and arrogance, the notion of having that finger on the nuclear button is absolutely horrifying to me. I've literally had dreams about it. You know, someone cross him the wrong way and he won't know how to respond intellectually or have a real, you know, win-win communication. And so he'll just get pissed off, you know, which he's done many times. And that's one thing if you're just calling names, but it's another thing if you've got, you know, armies and nuclear weapons.
Well, then Rand Paul he's going Rand Paul's for raising the military budget too, while we're at it. I mean, these guys, he may have some more understanding of liberty, but he's got horrible stuff going. You know, he kind of jumps to it, in my opinion, before we're ready. Like, well, the state shouldn't be in on choosing whether or not women should have the right to choose. That's right. They shouldn't be, but they are. So meanwhile, give women the right to choose. So that's,
yeah, Rand is big on defense and mysteriously even takes that to raising the military budget, at least in his words. And I think he's probably telling the truth that he would try to stay out of foreign wars, because he's certainly been talking about that all his life and throughout his congressional career. I think that the most corrupt of all of the major candidates are Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. They've proved it many times over. They've proved themselves to be puppets to the system, from, you know, assassinations to 9/11 to drug dealing to the Federal Reserve. I mean, I won't even go there. I would never. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole now, because it's so disgusting and probably unnecessary at this point. But it, to those people out there who think that, oh, if we get a woman president, that's somehow going to bring feminine energy and peace to the world. You know, Kimberly is always telling the story about her grandmother being a suffragette, and they literally fought for years to get the women's right to vote, especially because they thought that would do it, you know, that peace would come with the women's right to vote. Well, horrifyingly untrue. It's not sufficient. It's actually philosophical understanding, you know, it's ethical integrity, not gender, which is going to determine these things. So people ask me, well, you know, who are you going to vote for? And interestingly enough, people are often suggesting online and in emails and so forth and at public events that I run for president. And I genuinely am touched by the acknowledgement, because I think in our culture that usually means it's a sign of some sort of respect and admiration, and I deeply appreciate that. But the actual notion, I mean, of course I wouldn't be elected. I doubt if I would survive the campaign if it was looking promising at all. But even if I were elected, the notion of being the head of the most powerful mafia, you know, murder, cheating, counterfeit, you know, hit squad in history is absolutely horrifying to me. And the notion that I could actually get good things done is fun to think about, but I don't think it's realistic at all. Larkin Rose, the author of that book that Bruce held up earlier, the Greatest Superstition or whatever it was, he's written a book. He's written a novel about someone like me getting elected as president. They pretend that they're not, that they don't hold these values, and they get elected. And then, you know, their first speech is very inspiring when they begin to reveal the truth about how they're going to dismantle government. And I was, you know, on a more realistic level, I was invited by both Jill Stein and the Green Party, and also Andrew Basiago, I think he calls it the Truth Party, to join their ticket as vice president. And again, I appreciated the acknowledgement, but it's not how I would want to spend my time. And frankly, when people ask me if I would want to, who I would vote for, I personally would rather spend my energy and my reputation on spreading the word of the invalidity of the very notion of the state, and the necessity of understanding and promoting voluntarism and true equal rights for everyone, rather than any what's the title of that book? The problem of political authority. I'd rather expose the problem of even the notion of political authority than cast my vote. I often have the metaphor comes to mind that if I were to go to time travel and wake up in a society way in the past where when they were still sacrificing, you know, teenage virgins to the weather gods or something like that, and you know, the culture got to vote on who was going to have the honor of doing the sacrifice, I wouldn't participate in that vote. I'd rather talk about the notion of sacrifice and the notion of appeasing the gods by killing people than I would, you know, voting for the lesser of some number of evils. So I personally won't be participating. And I respect that people like Ron Paul and Mary Ruart and Gary Johnson and Michael Badnarik and others have used the campaign process to bring ideas of liberty to the national stage as much as possible. I totally respect and honor that. It's just I would rather be doing it in more current tense liberated forms like we are with Thrive. And I was thrilled, Bruce, when you showed that book, because one of my other predictions of good news for 2016 is I predict that Kimberly and I will complete a book on the liberty perspective that will be as fresh to that venue as Thrive was to documentary film. And my prediction is, I feel confident about it because we're already close to 100 pages into the effort and looking to set aside time to get that done in 2016. So I think I'll stop there on politics. Kimberly, anything else you want to add before we move on?
Yeah, I have a, you know, I'm so oriented toward the stages here. And as much as I also look to the time when we won't have government authority with the power that it does now, meanwhile, there's going to be somebody there. And I think, you know, Trump is a lot more dangerous than some others. Not more dangerous than Hillary, actually. I think we've studied so much, Foster and I, about both socialism and about Hillary, that it's just like, I can't do it. I don't know how to go there. But I do think about voting just in third party to help shake that up. I think more and more people are voting outside of the two-party system to let it be known that that stranglehold can no longer suffice. And I think it's also, you know, I think about, I'm so committed on the grassroots level. And I noticed that, you know, less than 0.5% of the people who could register to vote do register to vote, and less than 0.5% of the ones who are registered vote. So the reality in America is that most people don't vote. And I believe that's because they experience that it's the same no matter what. Now, it's not true that nothing changes no matter who's president. It's just that with all that global economic stuff and how that plays out, it's so impactful on people's lives that, you know, how it's going to look different under Hillary. And I just don't see it getting looking up. So I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I can't tell. I participate in local elections because I'm big in these constitutional protection zones. I think creating local areas that have the power to resist what's coming down, I think, is really important. So I'm much more engaged on the local level than I am on a national level, but haven't decided yet what I'm going to do there. But I do know that I speak out a lot. Many people who I know and love are voting for Sanders, and I really do a lot to try to help inspire them to put the pressure on to have the conversations that I think aren't being had and need to, both about the mandatory vaccines and about his war record and about his refusal to help on the edit the Fed bill when it came down to it. So if he's so good on Wall Street, why isn't he going after the Federal Reserve? So I think that real that pressure really needs to be on him. All right, we have some others coming up.
Thanks so much, Joyce.
Thank you so much.
Sorry about that. Go, you're muted.
Got it. Okay, I think we've got Grant up next. Grant, you're unmuted, and your camera's ready. Grant, are you there? Oh, I hear something, but it doesn't sound like it's coming through. Did you want to read the question, Kimberly?
Sure. Foster mentioned gold-backed banks. I saw that gold was down about 10% on the year in the Wall Street Journal the other day. Can you remind me why gold-backed currency is really any more stable or safe than paper money? I know it's an actual rare metal, but so what?
Yeah, it's a great question. The gold has just been hammered for the last 2 years. And it's virtually all of it has been artificial. The evidence is very solid, if you want to research it, that it has been rigged. Almost all of it has been sell-offs of so-called paper gold. That's where you can sell gold without actually ever moving gold or giving up any. It's just the whole gold market has become a vast percentage of it has become a fiat market in the sense that that rather than trading gold, people are trading pieces of paper, which supposedly represent a gold holding. But of course, that's been corrupted. And, you know, it's 30, 40, up to 100% inflated, where many, many people will supposedly be holding the same amount of gold, the same bars of gold at the same time. And then they can trade them. You know, they can leverage them up and then trade them without ever actually delivering them. So it's just a means to suppress the market, because the Federal Reserve is has run out of tools to try to manipulate the market. They can't realistically raise rates. I mean, they raised it 0.25%, and that was a big, you know, hoo-ha in the media. It's fundamentally insignificant. But if they raised it even a couple of percentage points, the government and the big banks and even many corporations would be completely out of business, because of all the leveraged debt that they have that they can't pay anyway, much less be able to pay then. And in terms of gold-backed banks, the I mentioned earlier these bail-ins that have just been authorized to start this past January 1st in Europe. Well, they've the laws have already been passed to legitimize it in the United States too. It just hasn't been launched yet. And basically, not only do the banks not have your money, when you take your money to the bank, whether it's in gold or in, you know, you deposit a check or do a transfer or whatever, the old-fashioned assumption is you put $10,000 in the bank, and when you need it, you can go get it. Well, it's not there. They maybe kept $1,000 of that. And the rest, they're selling, they're investing, they're loaning out, you know, 10 times as much as they actually have, and even more with the big banks. So the big scare always is having to run on the bank. You know, things look rough in the economy. There's going to be a recession or a depression or inflation. So everybody runs to the bank. And what do? Well, they lock the bank doors. And when they open it 2 weeks later, if they do, traditionally in history, they eventually do, the money that you had there is worth 40% of what it used to be, because they had to actually devalue the currency, something like that. So I mentioned that this my friend is involved in a gold-backed bank. These are starting up now around the country. There's one in Colorado. There's one in Utah. They're getting started where they actually hold your gold in the bank. Now, this was done a couple of times before. A guy named Franklin Sanders, who's a gold medal dealer in Tennessee, did it, and he was raided by the feds, and I don't know whether he went to prison or not, but they shut him down really fast. And then a guy named, I can't remember his first name, his name is Von Nuthaus, strangely enough, created the Liberty Dollar, which was actually genuinely backed. It was either gold or silver, or you could have Liberty Dollar paper dollars, but they actually had your money in the vault in a warehouse, and you could go inspect it at any time you want. Well, the government shut that down too, under the guise of saying, well, it was too much like the dollar, so we're going to call it counterfeit, and they shut him down. And I think he was under house arrest for years. I would see him occasionally at conferences, and he would be closely guarded. But he finally won his suit just a few months ago, and they're actually giving him back the money. I think they use this to not just to shut down one person, but to intimidate anybody who tries to do it. But they confiscated, I think, $20 to $30 million out of his warehouse. I don't know how much they're actually giving back. You know, and I look forward to cashing in some of my Liberty dollars now. But anyway, the notion is. It's what do we really value? And we've all been valuing pieces of paper for, you know, since the 70s. We originally, when the Federal Reserve came in, the pieces of paper were actually backed by gold. And then that started tapering off. And then Nixon finally got rid of all gold backing in the early 70s. And now it's just pieces of paper, backed by the full faith and credit of the most corrupt and indebted institution in the history of humanity. So is that a good bet? You know, would you choose that if it weren't enforced on you? I don't think so. You know, if you had a bank, if you had several banks on a city block, and some of them actually held your money, and the others just were all fiat money, which bank would you go to? You know, which currency would you use? So fortunately, it looks like these new banks, it looks like we've come far enough, again, like the electric car, and hopefully like it is beginning to happen with new energy. Hopefully we've come far enough that we're starting to get rid of fractional reserve, and we're starting to get rid of fiat money, and actually move to an honest basis. And that's the key, is an honest, transparent basis. You know, I've got no problem with Bitcoin. I certainly wouldn't put everything that I had in Bitcoin, because various things could corrupt it, you know, from electronic problems to corruption within it, to government raids or whatever. But Bitcoin was the most successful currency, again, for the third year in a row in 2015. And there are other alternative currencies that are coming out and growing really fast because they have an honest basis that circumvents the corruption of the central banking system. So the whole key for me, people are always asking Kimberly and me, well, if you were head of the Treasury, what system would you put in? And to us, that's the wrong question. First of all, there shouldn't be a Treasury. And secondly, even if there were, the key is to have a true free market in currency. So if somebody wants to do Bitcoin, somebody wants to do gold, somebody wants to do credit, somebody wants to do barter, whatever it is that you want to do, you can try it. But if you're cheating people, you're going to be prosecuted, and you're going to need to make restitution, and you're going to be shunned, you know, economically and socially, until you have restored your reputation. So in a true free market of currencies, the best ones, as the best corporations, the best banks, and so forth, will surface very quickly because they're convenient, they're reliable, they're inexpensive. And currently, I think the best option is to just use various currencies. If you have, you know, assets to invest in various currencies. The yuan and the ruble are much more stable than the dollar right now, even though the dollar is being touted as the strongest currency in the world. As we covered earlier, it could collapse within, you know, days, weeks, or months to a great extent. So once again, the voluntary society is the answer, and how that applies is, you know, up to the creativity of each one of us.
Foster, can you say, given where we're at right now, so you say invest in a variety of currencies. There are a lot of questions coming in, like specifically, would you take your money out of the bank? Would you have gold? Clearly, some people only have enough money to get by barely month to month, in which case you have your dollars to pay your rent. And I think the reason, of course, we're into this paper money is because it's used to pay taxes. We have to be. But what not looking to the future, but just right now, what do you recommend doing with money for people?
Yeah, I have a close friend. We got to know each other, I think, in 2006 or 7. So he began, you know, we were making Thrive, so he began to hear various stories from me. And I think he probably thought I was a wild-eyed, paranoid, maniac conspiracy theorist. So he didn't pay much attention to the stories I was telling and the advice that I was giving leading up to the 2008 crash. He's a diligent, worker on a daily basis, and he's got a young family, and he had saved $50,000. And the crash of 2008, within a month, wiped out over 90% of what he had spent, I think it was 4 years, saving. And so he came to me and he said, okay, now I want you to retell me what those stories you were telling me, and give me some advice on, you know, I don't have a lot of money, but I want to, you know, if I can save some, where would I put it? So I am not a professional advisor, so don't take any of this as what you should do. All I can tell you is some things that have worked for me and have worked for some other people that I've recommended things to. And That is, first of all, diversification. Don't put everything in any one thing. Secondly, I do believe that fiat currencies are coming down and soon. So to whatever degree you can not be dependent on dollar-denominated assets, whether that's whether that's cash in the bank or under your mattress. I mean, it's great to have some cash stowed away, you know, enough for a few months of expenditures. But in terms of a storehouse of wealth, that paper money. I mean, if you've followed Zimbabwe at all, I think they recently printed their first $50 trillion bill because it was just getting too inconvenient, as it was in, you know, in Germany in the 40s to wheel a wheelbarrow of paper money to go get a loaf of bread. It can happen, and it can happen to very big, strong countries. So what I recommend is diversifying. If you have funds to invest in, you know, invest in a few companies that are likely to survive the roller coaster ride. Find the best blue chip companies that you can, that you can believe in. You know, whether it's maybe an Apple or something like that. You know, any big blue chip company has problems with corruption, including Procter & Gamble and including Google and so forth. Those are the types of companies that, if you can find some good ones, that are most likely to survive. If you have any extra assets, invest in companies, in new companies, small companies, startups, and so forth, that are actually making the kind of change in healthcare, in free energy, in agriculture, and so forth, that you would want to see in the world, and money that you need to safeguard. I highly recommend having it in real estate, having it in precious metals, having it in supplies that you can guard and that you can trade in case of emergency, but keep a very, very limited supply in the bank, because if the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which insures deposits up to, I can't remember what it is now, $150,000 or something like that, they're completely leveraged to the hilt. They've got less than 10% in their assets of what they've guaranteed. So the notion that they're going to come bail you out in a collapse is, I think, really a fool's notion. And I have literally seen personally the letters that got sent out years ago while we were making Thrive at that time to banks after the 2008 crash, advising the officers of the banks to be prepared to go into safe deposit boxes and confiscate cash, gold, and guns in case of economic collapse or other national emergency. So your safe deposit box is not the place either. So I recommend finding, you know, for precious metals or something like that, finding a private place where only one or two other people that you know and trust well know where it is, and then keeping things like that in there. It doesn't take up much room. Gold and silver do not take up much room. So you don't need a big vault or something like that. But just do whatever you need to do to find peace of mind, knowing that you may not have figured it all. You know, I know people who've put 100% of their assets, extra assets into gold, and they might be right and make a fortune, and they could absolutely be wiped out as well. So if you spread it around and feel good that you've taken precautions for you and your family and your community, you know, whatever happens, that's when you're going to sleep best at night. And that's maybe the greatest wealth of all.
Foster, can I add something?
Sure.
Well, I just wanted to add this one little piece on the gold aspect, which very few people talk about. And I didn't actually realize until I took your advice and actually converted some of my savings into gold. When I actually took possession of the coin and brought it home and put it in my safe, there was an energetic shift in my field that I would never have anticipated unless I had done that. So I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's very significant.
Yeah. And again, it's not because gold is somehow magic. Gold has fantastic qualities, both industrially and in terms of being able to get it very pure, put it into different forms, that type of thing. So it has been for thousands of years the most reliable storehouse of value. But the, you know, there's also silver and there's platinum and there's palladium and there'll be, you know, there's Bitcoin and more things. It's just a matter of assessing its convenience and its convertibility and its value for the world that you're living in now and that you think you're going to be living in the future.
I think I need to say a few things, but one is that I think with the gold, the fact that the price can be so suppressed, I mean, people really have gotten screwed who bought into gold thinking that it was going to go up. And there is no way to say for sure. But because this asset-backed system is coming on board with the world and that the BRICS is gold-backed and that China is gold-backed, because of that, the chances of gold going up are much higher than if we were relying on another fiat system. So that's the reason that I think, and that's why you have to get educated, because if you just read what's happening, gold would look horrible. The yuan looks horrible. Like all these things, like, wait, what's actually a good thing to do? So I think it requires kind of figuring out what's going on. I think Catherine Austin Fitz is a good person to track also on this. She talks about what companies are most corrupt and who are doing what. I don't think there are any blue chip companies that aren't corrupt, but I do think that there are smaller companies that you can go with that will make it and survive as long as they're positioned to provide a need that's going to last through people not having, going through so much turmoil. So,
and before you go on to the next point, that while you're on the BRICS, we talked about the rise of the BRICS countries before. And if you don't know, China, India, and Russia are the largest purchasers of real gold, physical gold in the world, and they are mining it and buying it and keeping it as fast as possible, because they know that we're moving to this asset-backed, global economy. And so the more real assets that you've got, the more value you will have for your people and for your country in moving forward. Go ahead.
The big bankers are also buying up gold. Just to know personally, that's what they're doing. And one of the things we watch is what are people with money doing, right? Because especially the ones in the know, like the bankers. So I think that that's a significant thing. I would always get a little bit if you possibly could, just because I think it's a good bet. But in any case, Foster, we have 10 minutes. We have another good question on board. You have some more predictions that we want to hear. That's part of what was offered. So I think you ought to do those. And okay. I think we had an interesting question about what's going on in Oregon from Melanie to bring up also. And Goa had something else to say. So how about if you do some predictions?
Okay. A few more bad news predictions in 2016. I think, unfortunately, we're going to see the attempted spread of mandatory vaccination, and that's going to need a major counter movement. And that we're also going to see a continued effort to take people's guns away. Obviously, Obama is committed to doing anything he can on that. He just issued, I think it was 27 executive orders in that regard, because he wasn't having any luck with Congress. I think we're going to see more and more confrontations regarding sovereignty and the individual sovereignty, and the Oregon standoff is an example of that. We can get to that hopefully in a bit. I think that we're going to see a significant collapse of the stock market, and it could be very soon. I think we're going to see significant conflict and collapse in various countries, exacerbated by the all of the floods of Mideastern refugees that are being taken into countries without the assets to take care of them. And it's just simply being imposed on taxpayers. And there's cultural clashes that are just not being handled well at all. So I think it's intentional, and I think it's going to be a major source of conflict. And I think that was intended from the beginning. In terms of good news, more good news predictions, and this isn't just for 2016. I mentioned a few of these very quickly at the end of our last Thrive Together call that we did with Nassim. But I believe that we may well see disclosure and contact very soon, if not in 2016, very soon after. I think we're going to be seeing major alternative education, people just flooding out of the public schools and out of mandatory vaccination into alternative education, and that a lot of that education will be really based on a recognition of the fundamental pattern as the key to most levels of academic topics, but also as the key to the process of allowing young people to create and explore their own self-designed education. I think that we're going to see a real increase in media having to do with peaceful parenting, and we're going to be doing more of that ourselves through Thrive. One of the reasons why Stéphane Molyneux is so popular is that he is really educating the public, basically waking people up to the fact that spanking your kids is still child abuse. You know, it's hitting another human being in a way that you would be arrested and imprisoned if you did it to another adult. And yet we're doing it at the rate of over 80%, even in the U.S. Over 80% of parents are still beating their children and just calling it, conscientious discipline or something like that. So his estimate that he just came out with recently is that over 250,000 families have changed their practice and gotten rid of spanking and hitting as a result of the efforts that he's been doing through his podcast. So I think that's going to be one of the most exciting developments. And I think we may well start seeing tax revolts, the same way we're starting to see property revolts and sovereignty revolts. I think more and more people are waking up, especially if Sanders is elected and tries to double or triple the tax rates. I think that we may well see physical revolts as a result of taxation, as a result of sovereignty issues, and as a result of medical tyranny, where they're actually sending, SWAT teams to your door to kidnap your child and inject them with things. I think we're literally on the verge of that type of stuff if enough people don't wake up soon. I think that we'll be seeing holographic television sets very soon, 3D printed, of course, where you'll actually be watching a football game or a dance recital or something like that with 3D looking beings in your living room. I think we'll be seeing potentially anti-gravity vehicles. I mean, I'm confident that not only the extraterrestrials, but the Black Ops projects has had this for probably half a century, but I think we're going to start seeing it come out. So I think I'll leave it at there. I'm very optimistic about the bulk of the predictions that I would have for the next year or two, but it's going to demand sustained and increased vigilance that we're not sucked into a police state by false flag operations.
Yeah, and one thing I just want to add here in terms of on the what can I do end of things is, keeping relations good, relations with your neighbors and with other people, having a few backup supplies of the things that you absolutely need, and, figuring out food stuff that's just basic so that if there's runs on these things and then markets go, get empty, that you have somebody that you're on a buddy system with here to figure things out. I don't know if that's going to be needed or not, but I think it makes people feel better if they know that they've at least considered that possibility and have what they, the most basic things on board. And depends on what climate you're in and all the rest. But I really think that these things like being able to grow food in your yard for everybody or in your home. I mean, you can have little especially as solar energy and these other energies come down, this is how it all fits together, that as we get more and more independent with our solutions, then we don't need the big government to provide the basics of just keeping people alive, which is, of course, what we're stuck with now in needing to vote for someone who's going to help people because there's no other way for them to get help. And I think that's what we need to be cutting into here with our time, is empowering people with those independent means to survive.
Yeah, the better you can take care of yourself and your family independently, the better you'll be able to help people in neighborhood in times of crisis. And if people are making fun of you for being a prepper or a doom and gloom conspiracy theorist or something like that, I guarantee you, if the situation gets rough, they will be on your doorstep. And if the situation doesn't get rough, great. You were prepared and didn't have to worry about it, and hallelujah. Okay, we're coming very close to the end of the time. I want to just cover a couple of announcements about.
Go has one also, Foster. Goa has an announcement too.
Okay, why don't you start with yours, Goa, and then bring up the flyer for the conference next weekend.
Okay, great. Well, in thinking about today's event, I've got a couple of things written down, and so I just wanted to actually kind of create a keyword for 2016, which I'm witnessing now as being liberation. Because I'm really seeing that where we've talked about it in energy technologies, we've talked about it in economics and both sides of that, we're seeing, and I'm calling it a liberation in information. And all of this is really leading to a liberation in consciousness. And I think that's the real goal here. And, you know, last night I was watching one of my favorite shows, The Blacklist. And I think this is a signpost because, you know, this was one of the first shows that actually called out the cabal. And so I wanted to just restate the final line of last night's episode, which actually gave me chills. It's when James Spader said, "Ready your team. It's time we take down the cabal." So I just wanted to leave you with that.
That's a great note to end on. So why don't you bring up that poster for next weekend, because it certainly leads into that. Kimberly and I have this fantastic opportunity that we were invited to. It's called Architects of the New Paradigm, and this doesn't mean just get a few talking heads and put them on a pedestal. This is about a full weekend where a few of us who are presenting on the first day will set a context, but then there will be an interactive panel that night. The entire next day will be interactive workshops with the presenters, and there will also be a video booth where people can go in and leave their messages, their questions, their concerns, and also their ideas of what's needed for a new paradigm that could actually move us into a thriving world. So Kimberly and I have been very excited. We put a lot of time into preparation for this one because we don't see this as just another conference where a few people are singled out and sell their products and so forth. This, I think, particularly given the, you know, who's hosting it and why, and the presenters that they're inviting and the format, I think this can be a landmark conversation about what's missing from the new paradigm. Because we've been talking about the new paradigm, you know, in new age kind of consciousness transformation circles for, you know, decades. And we're still on the brink of, you know, global disaster environmentally, economically, politically, and so forth. So the question that I'm most interested in is what's missing from the new paradigm and how can we bring it in? And of course, our answer that we will be bringing in all different ways is the non-aggression principle, because we have seen that, as we called out in Thrive, that the Taurus is in fact the pattern for, it's the blueprint for sustainable systems on every scale of the universe. And when you, and you know, it holds up in agriculture and holds up in free energy and on, but when you apply it at the human level, it's the individual, not the abstraction of the group, that needs to be primarily regarded. Otherwise, the individuals, people get authorization to abuse individuals under the guise of this abstraction of the group, and it's led to tyranny throughout history. And as Martin Luther King said, the arc of the moral universe bends toward justice. And that's my observation too, but we're not there yet. And so we're going to be talking about, you know, next steps to actually implement the three stages and what it would take to move as safely as possible into a prosperous, you know, secure and thriving stateless society.
It was, we really did it. We were invited separately to do this event, and we prepared our presentations without really talking to each other. So it was very interesting. We just compared notes for the first time the other day to see what are, and of course we have different orientations that reflect, you know, I'm an activist from way back and pretty strategic on that level. So is Foster, but we come at this from different viewpoints, I mean, different angles in. So it's fun to see. And I think a lot of the people there and we have 90 minutes for engaging with people in these workshops each following the presentation. So it really will be interactive and fun, and we'd love to see any of you there.
And of course, Richard Dolan will be bringing in his incredible perspective on ETs and UFOs, as he did with the Thrive Together group. Joel Garbun is the head of the New Energy Foundation. You know, Catherine Austin Fitz, you know of her, and Danny Sheehan from the film. She's one of the most sophisticated finance people in the world. And Danny Sheehan's our longtime hero in constitutional justice, as well as ETs and liberty issues. And then George Norrie is going to be there leading the panel on the first night. And then the whole thing is going to be hosted by this guy, Ron James, who I did an interview with yesterday. He's terrific. He's done a ton of films, and he hosts something called iVolve TV. And he's very savvy about the global domination agenda and ways that we can get beyond it. So it is, we've been told it is filling up to capacity, it looks like. So if you're interested, reserve a place as soon as you can. I'm assuming and hoping that some aspects of it at least will be available online after, but you can't count on that yet.
All the presentations will be actually, but none of the workshops and the interactive stuff. Also, February 13th, we'll have another Thriver subscriber meeting, as Foster mentioned, talking about, the alternative cancer treatment that so many of the people have been harmed who've been dealing with that and what we can do about that.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the specific suppression and in many cases murder of those holistic doctors as an example. And then we're going to be expanding that out into what is this pattern of suppression and intimidation, whether it's in energy or health or media or economics, and how can we work to get beyond that? So we'll, as soon as we know specifically whether this guest will be on with us, then we'll post the details on the Thrive Together site.
All right. Thank you for another fabulous time. We appreciate you all in this network so much. It's the reason we're here. So thank you.
Yeah, and special thanks to Goa and to Mitch and Rob, who you rarely, if ever, get to see, but they're working diligently. They're like the feet of the duck underneath the water. You don't see them, but they're working full time during these sessions behind the scenes to make sure that everything runs smoothly technically, and that anybody who's having problems getting on or with sound or video and so forth gets those issues worked out. So thanks to the Thrive team, and we'll look forward to seeing you on February 13th. So, Goa, why don't you open it up so we can say goodbye to one another?
You bet. And thanks to everybody in chat. It was really lively this time. So thanks, everybody.
Yeah, we'll be posting your recommendations.
All right. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Love you. Goodbye to this chat.
You guys.
Foster and Kimberly, it's Randy.
Thank you for a wonderful call.
Thanks all.
Great event.
Thank you all. There's so much feedback, we can't hear any one of you for very long.
Love you, love you, love you, love you.
Thank you all. See you later.
Bye, everyone.
Okay, go.
Thank you.